Hello and welcome to week 7 of A Year of Prince. In the week of Thursday 12th of February to Wednesday 18th of February, I listened to the following 7 songs. Style from Emancipation, 1996. Head from Dirty Mind, 1980. Gold from The Gold Experience, 1995. The Rest of My Life from The Vault, Old Friends for Sale, 1999. Soul Sanctuary, also from Emancipation, 1996. What's My Name from Crystal Ball, 1998. And Temptation from Around the World in a Day, 1985. They represent compositions from the years 1980 to 1999 in the back catalogue of Prince. Let's crack straight on to song number 1. That's right, it is Style by Prince, or The Symbol as he was at that time, from Emancipation, 1996. It's track 6 of 12 from the third disc of that 3-disc set. It clocks in at 6 minutes and 40 seconds. This track tells of the many ways and characteristics a person can exhibit style. So let's have some info before I talk about how much this song works for me. The personnel on this song consists of Prince doing everything other than Eric Leeds on the horns, Walter Chancellor Jr. providing extra saxophone, as well as Brian Lynch, and the shouts that can be heard throughout the song are provided by Scrap D, Michael Mack, and Smooth G. The song is assumed to have been recorded in March of 1996, during the same sessions that yielded I Rock Therefore I Am, Da Da Da, and Mr. Happy, the latter two of those appearing on Emancipation. Very little else is actually known about this track, so let's have my thoughts on it. This is an interesting track. It's a mixture of Prince doing like a rap sing-song and the horn work of primarily Eric Leeds on saxophone. It's interesting because the saxophone is largely a riff that is used as a loop, which adds to that rap feel that the song has. The lyric is obviously the most important thing on offer here, and it's essentially a list song. It's a list of all the things that, by doing them, show someone to have style, or show someone to have, effectively, class. Now, one of the lines in the song is, style is a second cousin to class, but in truth, that's really what the list is. It's mannerisms that will act as class for someone to be classy. Now, musically, it's not that interesting. The saxophone loop with cowbell behind, the shouty chants, and then the rap style singing is okay. And at 3 minutes 32, we actually see Eric Leeds let off the chain a bit. And he provides 30 or 40 seconds of nice saxophone work. There's a particular bit between 4 minutes and 4 minutes 10 where he goes higher and higher on the saxophone, and it ends with effectively a high pitch whistle, and it does sound really good. I mean, Eric Leeds, he's going to step up his game whenever he lifts the horn. At 4 minutes 35, the song should really finish, and instead we get Prince putting on like a pothead voice, a character. Behind that, we get some nice electric guitar, which is the only thing that makes that bearable. And at 5 minutes 20, it's almost like the list of things that make you classy or give you style. He's come up with a few more examples, so up it starts again. 6 minutes, he runs out of his second list. We go into the breakdown, and we get a couple of left and right speaker tricks to extend the song a little bit extra, and then we tune out with the cowbell. So let's talk some of the lyrics. One of the lines he comes out with is that style is not sitting courtside, but is owning the court and charging everyone a fee. Now, that particular lyric reminds me of, I believe it was Chris Rock in one of his stand-up shows, where He tries to talk about the difference between rich and wealthy. And his example in that stand-up routine is that Shaquille O'Neal is rich because he earns millions of dollars a year when he was playing. But the guy who pays his salary, he's wealthy. And this line always put me in mind of that, even though it predates that Chris Rock stand-up. It's the same premise that they're getting towards. There's the style of being completely wealthy, and it's one up on the normal thinking. The normal thinking would just be to get some great courtside seats, but, you know, own the stadium, it's much better. The idea of it being a list of things really starts to become evident after a few of the examples. You know, style is the face you make on a Michael Jordan dunk. I think it's just personal to Prince. At this point in his life, 1996, he's in his late 30s now. He's, you know, just getting married. He's just got married. He's about to become a father. What is style to him? And I think it's an excuse for him to just create this list song. One of the lines that is particularly prevalent, given the whole history, personal history around this Emancipation album, is that style is the glow in a pregnant woman's eyes, which I would believe would date the song to be when Maite was pregnant. I think it's an interesting insight into his thoughts, but by no means is it a highlight of his career. That said, the song is not an embarrassment either. It's overly long, but, you know, this is a common criticism I have with a lot of the songs on Emancipation. Because he had set himself this structure of 1 hour per disc, 12 tracks, you see a few of the tracks get dragged out in order to meet that running time. And this is a track that, had it finished at 4 minutes, or 4:35, fading out on Eric Leeds' saxophone, it could be seen as a moderate success. It could be seen in a very similar way to It from Sign of the Times. Obviously, a completely different subject, but a very stripped down song, Prince with Eric on backing, and everybody leaves happy, it doesn't outstay its welcome. Drag it out to 6:40, it does outstay its welcome. And I feel it's only 6:40 in order to make the running time of Emancipation. So I'm actually going to keep this review quite brief, because it's just effectively a list song, and I don't want to go through the entire list of all the things that Prince deemed stylish back in 1996. Score-wise, I give it 43 out of 100. There are some quirks, some lyrics that I quite like, but it's a glorified experiment, really. As an experiment, it does work, but then it stays around too long. So, because of the attributes that withdraw from its appeal, the score has been dragged down. So I give it 43 out of 100. Next track. That's right, it is Head by Prince from the album Dirty Mind of 1980. It's track 6 of 8 on that disc, and it clocks in at 4:40. This song tells of Prince coercing a virgin bride into performing oral sex on the way to her wedding. Yeah, I really did say that, and he really does sing about it. So let's have some info before I talk about how much this song works for me. This record was recorded somewhere in the May to June of 1980 at Prince's Lake Minnetonka home studio, the infamous Minnetonka from Purple Rain, the Apollonia purification scene, as many of you would be well aware of. The personnel on this record are Prince on everything other than Dr. Fink on synth, and the first ever appearance of Lisa Coleman. Here she performs vocals. There's actually no piano work by Lisa. And that's our first bit of information, really. It's Lisa's first appearance because the keyboard player for Prince's band up until that point had been Gail Chapman. Gail Chapman left in objection to the lyrics of this song. I'm sure there were other issues of what Prince wanted her to do in terms of stage show. There's an infamous dance routine that goes with this song that oral sex is simulated, or certainly suggested, as he plays guitar. And Gail Chapman, quite understandably, it must be said, had a real problem with that. We're talking about 1980 here, and, you know, this is as risque as it's going to get. In terms of the lyrical content, up until this point, Prince had released Bambi, which suggested him trying to convert a lesbian to heterosexual activity. This then came along, an album called Dirty Mind, and had two or three real shock lyrics within this album. This, by far, was the dirtiest. And even now, 34 years, 35 years on, listening to it, the lyric still has the power to shock you. I mean, he's talking about oral sex, it's a virgin bride on her way to her wedding, and he talks about something very similar to Bill Clinton's activities with Monica Lewinsky on her wedding dress. Much of that ability to shock is actually, thankfully, covered by his falsetto delivery. If you were to just put this on in the background, him singing in that way doesn't make the lyric stand out to you. So it's a song that you can very much put on and the lyric actually be missed. So let's have my thoughts on this record before I go too far into my analysis. Let's go music first. Dr. Fink on the synth. Some riffs. Bit of bass in the background. Hand claps, primarily acting as drums. Occasional fills come in with a real drum set, and it sounds like there's some snare being played along with the drum track. We then get synths, again, creating much of the atmosphere of this song. 3:20, the Fink, the Doctor, takes a nice solo for 30 seconds or so. The actual song itself starts and ends with this same synth sound, which I like to think of sounds like an exploding star. It's a crash of cymbal that sort of fades in and fades out. This song stops at the right time. Prince, by this time, had started to master how you create a groove that doesn't really change and can go on virtually indefinitely. It doesn't really change, but the small changes that do happen that are not essential to the structure of the groove allow for it to not become too repetitive. This groove is built on very little in the way of conventional sounds. It's a very interesting song, and really is, for something from 1980, otherworldly in the fact that it's done away with a standard guitar track, standard bass, standard drums. It's largely driven by the bass, and instead of drums, this hand clap with the occasional fill, so it doesn't feel too Spartan. So the groove for me is cool. It's very, very cool. And it's the reason why I return to this song. I don't return to this song for the lyrics. I think Prince is deliberately trying to shock. You know, he's 20, 22 years of age when this song comes out. He's clearly going for a persona, something to separate him out from his contemporaries at that time. We're nowhere near the superstar Prince that Purple Rain would introduce us to. So we've got someone here who's up against Rick James at that time. His intent is clear from the album cover of Dirty Mind. You know, he's dressed in women's underwear with a trench coat on and nothing else. He's clearly trying to court controversy with lyrics like this. And the introduction of Lisa Coleman into the fold in order to deliver the female vocal in this song is quite telling. She's almost robotic. There's zero emotion. She's almost not human when she talks about her lines. If you contrast that to what Prince is actually saying, it's a really negative connotation for me. It sounds creepy. It is creepy. The only salvation we get is it's sang with such a falsetto that you could actually put this song on in the background and you wouldn't be able to make out the lyric. but you'd enjoy the groove. And God forbid if someone actually did start to listen to the lyric, it's not the kind of track you could play in a crowded room. So, score-wise, I give it 58 out of 100. It is quirky. It's cool. It's a highlight of his earlier catalogue, certainly the pre-1999 purple patch that he entered. It is one of the better tracks of those early years. Looking back now, I just think that the lyric is largely unnecessary, but you have to say that Prince and Madonna and people like that from the 80s, this is how they push the envelope. This was their way of doing what rappers sought to do since. By pushing the envelope, there effectively ceased to be an envelope to be pushed. And if you look at modern music now, especially rap and hip-hop, everything goes. And it's songs like this that inadvertently open the door to that. So 58 out of 100 for Head. Next track. That's right, it is Gold by Prince, or The Symbol at that time, from The Gold Experience of 1995. It's track 18 of 18. It's the final song, which is actually just the 12th song on that album. Thank you to the computer-inspired interludes and segues throughout that album. It clocks in at a very long 7 minutes 23. Gold hints towards the nonsensical nature of reality. All that glitters ain't gold. That those who wish to believe in the afterlife and the presence of a greater power are free to do so, and everybody else should step aside. So let's have some info before I talk about how much this song works for me musically and lyrically. This song was recorded in late October of 1993 at Paisley Park. The personnel on that recording were the NPG, synonymous with the Gold Experience period of time. So we have Michael Bland on drums, Sonny T on bass, Tommy Barbarella and Morris Hayes on keyboards and synths. In this song we have the addition of Ricky Peterson on additional keyboards, Ricky P, who also served as producer for this song. It was recorded, as I mentioned, October 93 at Paisley Park, and lots of time was then spent on the Gold Experience album. There were various configurations between 93 and its eventual release in 95 that were problematic because of Prince's deterioration in his relationship with Warner Brothers, his record company. He wanted to put out much more material at a quicker rate than they were able to release profitably. In looking back, I can see both sides of it. I think it was a relationship that was never going to reach an equilibrium that kept both parties happy. I entirely understand Warner Brothers' inability to make money if you released so many albums so prolifically. But as a fan, I also understood that Prince wanted that music out there. And as a fan, now I would have liked a lot of the releases that were blocked by Warner's in that late 80s, early 90s period. I would have liked to have had them come out quicker and closer to Prince's actual writing of them. And that is born out of, most likely, the belief that Prince might have publicised them better. And looking at some of the albums that he's had since his supposed emancipation from Warner Brothers from 1996 through to the re-signing mid-2014, that doesn't actually bear true. He's released plenty of albums and lost interest in them. He just operates too fast for the modern music industry. And I think these days of releasing and downloading should suit Prince, and yet he doesn't want to go that route. He could release all the bootlegs that we want right now, we'd all log in and buy them, for whatever reason he doesn't. And he needs to get his backside in gear and remaster all those old albums because there's still money to be made from them. But I'm completely going off topic here. That's what the Gold Experience does to me. It draws all of this period in his life, 93 to 95, the breakup with Warner Brothers, it is crystallized in this record. So let's have some information about this track specifically. And more importantly, my thoughts on this track specifically. Prince himself stated at the time of release in the run-up to the Gold Experience that this song is the Purple Rain of the 90s. I'm under no illusion that he was seeking publicity in his fight against Warner Brothers, and this was a way of getting the public curious as to what this song would be and get the album released. However, it's a very apt description. This song is quite clearly taken from the Purple Rain mold. Started quiet, a prophetic or cryptic lyric, build the song, and then let rip on the guitar, and then fade out. And that is exactly the pattern that it follows. There are some tweaks to the exact layout of Purple Rain as opposed to Gold, but largely, if you were to listen to these songs back to back, you could see the natural parentage that Purple Rain has to this song. So where does it differ? Gold is based around strings. It starts with the strings above Tommy Barbarella, which sound like synth strings. 1990s technology hadn't quite mastered authentic sounding strings through a synthesizer. Then we have the piano, which sounds reminiscent of Purple Rain. Straight away is a hook. And the prophetic lyric that Prince starts to sing is more cryptically religious than the Purple Rain lyric. What I could say is the Purple Rain lyric is a conversation to another person. The Gold lyric sounds like a conversation to a group of people. It's more an announcement to people, whereas Purple Rain is a confessional. You know, I never meant to cause you any sorrow. I never meant to cause you any pain. I only wanted for you. I only wanted to do these things. I only wanted to see you laugh. I only wanted to see you in the Purple Rain. In Gold, we have, there's a mountain and it's mighty high. You can't see the top, and it's prophetic. It's clouded in a more cryptic type of lyric, but it's not talking to one person. It's addressing everybody with, this is how you see the promised land. I think that would have detracted slightly in how listeners would appeal to it. It certainly doesn't have that Purple Rain catchability because of that. Also, musically, this song has a lot more happening in it than Purple Rain does. From the start, we have extra synth, extra piano that Purple Rain didn't have. We've got acoustic guitar all the way through. It's great playing, it's lovely, but again, you can only hit the lucky jackpot once. Purple Rain could be seen to be imperfect, and if you were to try to fix the imperfections in Purple Rain, you come up with a song like Gold. And yet, it was the magic of Purple Rain that was not quantifiable. It's the magic that you can't see in Purple Rain that makes that song so great. Also, it was attached to a movie that, you know, dragged everyone to the cinema. You can't clone something and expect an exact replica, because much of it might be external. It might be where people are at that time, the decade, the age of the artist. So Gold is certainly an epic song. I mean, if we look at the musical structure of it, the song builds really well for about 3 minutes and 55. And then we get a na-na-na chant, which is almost like the Beatles have invaded. You know, it's Hey Jude. Some really nice lyrics. The ones that I appreciate in Gold are, even at the center of a fire, there is cold. You know, what's the use of being young if you ain't gonna get old? These are good lyrics, you know, they're valid questions to ask. 3 minutes 55 to 5:05. we start getting the chants come in. Now, this is, if I go back to the comparison with Purple Rain, the chants in Purple Rain come after the guitar. Here, they come before. So he's just slightly changed the pattern. So we start getting some chants, and then the guitar kicks off. At 5 minutes 10, boom, in comes the guitar. At 5:22, after he sort of worked his way up the fretboard, we get that note held, extended, Santana, Hendrix, lengthy note that just releases the expectation. It's all been building to that point, and that one note, it's like, boom, the game is on. The solo lasts until about 6 minutes and 5 seconds, and at which point it fades out in a pattern that is very, very similar to Purple Rain. That cymbal crash, piano, synthy fade out, which lasts a lot longer than you anticipate. In Purple Rain's probably about 1.5 minutes. Here also, it's about 1:15 before the actual song finishes. The one downside is we have the silly voiceover that is present in all of the Gold Experience. This voiceover of effectively a computer guiding you through what is the experience, the Gold Experience. There are versions out there in the ether that show the genesis of this song. The first version doesn't have the explosive guitar solo at the end, but does have everything else. So you can see how he built with the chants and epic na-na-nas towards a climax. But that climax was then begging out for the guitar solo. And as soon as the guitar solo is put on, you can hear the difference in that version. You know, it's the release that the song is aiming for. And without the voiceover, it really does sound like Purple Rain when it ends. Completely different chord structure, or a completely different key to the song of Purple Rain. But it's evident to anyone who listens to it. Now, what was interesting to me when I did some research into this track was that it barely registered in the US. In England, in the UK, this was a top 10 hit. This was all over the radio in 1995. And it was a big hit for him. I mean, it just scraped into the top 10, probably at number 10. At a time where Prince, the person, was taking quite a battering by changing his name to an unpronounceable symbol and all of the slave on the cheek, and all of that was fodder for the UK tabloids who love to knock people down. This song was a real solid hit. I mean, I thought it would have been huge throughout the world, but it barely registered. You know, it made number 88 in the US on the Billboard 100. So that's interesting to me. It is a deliberate attempt to me to recreate Purple Rain, the song, with very, very similar structure. The solo guitar work that he does is almost as good as the album version of Purple Rain. We've seen Purple Rain since, hundreds, if not 1,000 times, in various live shows, and yet a song that is so similar, Gold, has not really been played live other than the tour that promoted the album. And that is something that I would love to see change. Could you imagine a concert that started with Gold and ended with Purple Rain? You know, for a commercial concert, not a concert for us hardcore fans who would love to hear 20 songs that are heavily bootlegged and have never appeared on an album. That would be our perfect concert, would be this strange, unique set list. But for somebody who goes to see the greatest hits of Prince, if he started with Gold and ended with Purple Rain, oh, it's game over. It's game over. You put that sampler set in the middle and this would be fantastic. I actually think Third Eye Girl could do a decent job of this. The synths would be the only thing that are missing. Josh Welton could step in and cover them, or Prince could do them before stepping out and taking over the guitar solo at the end. This has got a natural place. It's got a natural place to be in Prince's shows these days, and yet it hasn't and it doesn't. The earlier version where he had no guitar reminded me of The Ladder, which also sounded like an attempt for him to go for that Purple Rain, bombastic, epic type song. Without the guitar solos, it doesn't work. With the guitar solo, this is a real solid Purple Rain clone. It's the best attempt he's done. Even now, when this song is 20 years old, I don't think he's come as close to Purple Rain, the song, as he did with Gold. For me, I'm going to score it 86 out of 100. And I'm going to give it the Stone Cold Classic applause, belatedly. So there we go. Yep. Stone Cold Classic. Gold. Stone Cold. This is a very enjoyable song. The lyrics are a bit too aloof, but I would love to hear this song played regularly live. It's a little bit short on the original brilliance of Purple Rain, but it is a worthy successor. So that is Gold. On to the next track. Said the race was fair, but I'm gonna keep running just the same. Today, it's the first day, the best of my life. Don't look now, but here comes another. That's right, it is The Rest of My Life by Prince from The Vault, Old Friends for Sale, from 1999. It's track 2 of 10 on that album, and it clocks in at 1 minute 38. This song tells of how life can be a rocky and uncertain future, but just keep pushing through. Then today will be the first day of the rest of your life. Take control, respect that you're alive, and go live. So let's have some information on this track. This was believed to have been recorded in mid-April of 1992 at Platinum Studio in Melbourne, Australia, during the Diamonds and Pearls tour. The personnel at that time, then, were the MPG Diamonds and Pearls era, including Rosie Gaines on keyboards and a variation or a formation of the MPG horns / hornheads. It was recorded for I'll Do Anything, the ill-fated James L. Brooks movie project, which was designed to be a musical film, and upon test screenings, all the music was removed when the audience reaction was so bad to it. Now, this song was recorded for that, but was actually not considered. All of the songs that Prince did submit and were used in the movie were all later cut because of that ill-fated screening. So let's have my thoughts on this track. Well, 1 minute 38. First thing to say is, it's short. It's jazzy. It's got a very swingy feel to it. It's an optimistic and bright sounding song. At the 53 second mark, we get a synth solo that should be out of place over what is a jazzy song. And it is a quirky solo, but it somehow works. At 1 minute 20 to 1 minute 35, we start getting some saxophone coming in, courtesy of the Hornheads, probably Kathy Jensen, and that, for me, is the highlight of the track. And at 1:38, it stops on the one, and it's over. Now, this song was written with a movie feel, and you can tell that. It feels like the music that will be used over a cutscene. Now, we know that Prince can score movies. He's an Oscar winner for Purple Rain. He scored Under the Cherry Moon and Graffiti Bridge. We know he can score his own movies. This is interesting because he's having to score somebody else's. And this song acts like that. I don't know the version that was submitted for the movie I'll Do Anything. Would it have been re-recorded from this version in order to strip out parts that the director perhaps wouldn't want? It's interesting. It's a question that we're not going to know the answer to. But it's very, very interesting to me that he is capable of doing what I would consider the Hans Zimmer type approach, the stereotypical musical score approach. As a song, I do enjoy it, but it is too short to be taken overly seriously. I like the jazzy feel. It's got one of the more organically jazzy feels to that type of Prince song. If we look at something like Caught in Time from Emancipation, which is similarly swing jazz feel to it, this, you can hear the liveness of this song. The synth solo goes against much of that and gives it a modernity that perhaps it doesn't deserve. But I like it. I like the jazzy feel. I really like the saxophone at the end. My only concern is it's just way too short. And that's a shame. A 3 minute version song, a 3 minute 38 version of a 1 minute 38 song would be much better to my ears. And it certainly got the legs that it could provide that. And certainly he had the band personnel at the time to be able to do that. Talented enough musicians to provide that. Score wise, I give it 50 out of 100 because of its brevity. But I like what he's doing, and with a bit more time dedicated, a longer duration, he could have exposed a lot more from this. So that is The Rest of My Life. Next track. That's right, it is Soul Sanctuary by Prince, or The Symbol at that time, from the album Emancipation of 1996. It's track 3 of 12 from disc 2 of 3. Get your head around that one. It comes in at 4 minutes and 41 seconds. Now, this track tells of how his woman is his sanctuary, her presence in his life and the companionship that she brings him provides his soul sanctuary. So let's have some information about this song. Well, this has got a checkered past, this song. It was recorded late 1995 at Paisley Park and is a one-man band extravaganza. It's Prince playing and singing everything. But that's not the story of its history. This song was actually written by Sandra St. Victor and T. Hammer as a track called Sanctuary. This track and a few others were sent to Prince with the view that Sandra St. Victor would collaborate with Prince. However, in the background, he worked on these songs himself, and in this case borrowed very heavily the lyrics and adopted a different musical interpretation, and the result is this. The other unintended consequence was one angry Sandra St. Victor, and spurred on by the fact that the credits were incorrect on the Emancipation album, did leave a long period of legal action, which has now all been resolved. Sandra St. Victor's original songs do sit on the shelf somewhere, whether that be at Paisley Park or at Elektra Records, a record company. But all we know is Soul Sanctuary. We don't know the original version and its exact approach. There is another version of Soul Sanctuary floating around, which is an early cut by Prince, an early demo stage, and it perhaps is closer to the original Sandra St. Victor. We shan't know. So, what do I think about this song? My first description would be New Age. And it's the wrong phrase for me to use, but this song has got an otherworldly sound to it. It's very ethereal. The instrumentation is very otherworld. It's primarily acoustic guitar, you know, that nylon string soft guitar in the background. There's elements of woodwind and These instruments that don't really feature in Prince's work. His falsetto delivery is performed throughout, something that we haven't really seen in earnest for 15 years at that point, since his very early albums. And you can see the growth in his voice. Interestingly for me, 20 years on, you can also see how his voice has grown even stronger since. Now, he's not a young man when Emancipation comes out, and yet his voice is still developing. it could be that the version that he's released here just could have done with a better vocal. But that's not to say that what we have on record here is not a very fine falsetto delivery. My concerns with this song start with the instrumentation. It sounds, for want of a better description, a bit synthy. For so much string work and woodwind and those breathy instruments, it just sounds cheap. If you listen between 2 minutes 15 and 2 minutes 30, you'll see what I mean. If this had been performed in front of a proper orchestra and given a real full-on vocal, albeit falsetto, but a real stretch-yourself attempt, this could be an absolute showstopper. It's a beautiful lyric. It really is. And I was a great fan of this song until I found out that Prince didn't write it. And that has cheapened the song a little bit for me, I must admit, because this lyric is pure poetry. And I feel for Sandra St. Victor. This wasn't a hit record. It was never going to be a hit record. And I don't mean because Prince took it and put it on Emancipation. It's just not the kind of record that you're going to ever turn on the radio and it be a number one hit. You know, it's not Chasing Pavements by Adele. It's not poppy enough, despite being a ballad, to garner that sort of attention. But it is an absolutely fabulous album track. I feel for her because I think she, you know, was wronged in the way that half a dozen of her tracks were taken, used, not really credited properly. She had to fight for that. And I think even though it should have been an opening for her into the music fraternity, it was a double-edged sword. It probably hindered her as much as it should have helped her. This song, though, at 3:30, Prince's vocal starts to stretch into real high points. Between 3:30 and then from 3:45, his falsetto just goes higher and higher, and he is more and more impassioned as the vocal goes on. I think he's shown on songs like Somewhere Here on Earth and Call My Name, to name two ballads since this track and this album, that vocally he's got more in him. But it is a very sweet song. And I think this is the type of song that divides opinion. For me, I like it and it's sweet. But at what point does that become too syrupy for somebody else? I think it's a real highlight of Emancipation. I think many of the songs on disc 2 are overtly about his relationship with Maite, his love for Maite, and I don't see that as too syrupy. I don't see it as too saccharine. The history that goes with this song, though, does mar my opinion of it. I can't ever deny what a stunningly beautiful lyric this is, though, and the delivery that Prince provides it is extremely solid. If you were to give me a wish list of songs to be performed by Prince with a symphony backing, as artists like George Michael and Sting have done, this is high up on the list. This would sound magnificent in that sort of environment. Maybe it's something we might see as Prince stretches into old age. I doubt it, though. I think vocally, he'll start to weaken before he entertains those sorts of ideas. So, score-wise, I give this 72 out of 100. It's a very high-quality song and contains very high-quality components. However, the way that they've been assembled could have been done with a bit more finesse. And I point at what I think is less of a vocal delivery than he's capable of. And I think the use of instrumentation, although studio impressive, I think the limitations of that approach can be heard on this album, on this record. But it is a highlight of the Emancipation album, for sure. Next track. Take my fame, I can't use it. My girlfriend calls me lame, game was over yesterday. Tell me what's my name. That's right, it's What's My Name by Prince from Crystal Ball of 1998. It's track 4 of 10 on the second disc of that 3-disc set. It clocks in at 3 minutes and 3 seconds. This song tells of the eternal question for Prince in the 90s. What's in a name? What really is the importance of a name? To take a line from the song, take my name, I can't use it. Foreshadowing the change to the symbol that he became recognized for shortly after. So let's have some information on this track. It is believed to have been recorded in May of 1993. The personnel at the time, in addition to Prince, were Michael B., Sonny T., and Morris Hayes. And that is all but the Gold Experience crowd. It is the configuration of the MPG between the Diamonds and Pearls and Gold Experience era. The only noticeable exception there being Tommy Barbarella on synths. The sound of this song is very, very live. It is believed to have been scheduled for August 93 inclusion in the ill-fated Glam Slam Ulysses dance show. And there was a segment in that dance show titled Scylla, and this track was to be used and would segue into a track called Poem. That Poem track would later be reworked into Orgasm for the Come album of 1994. So as with many of the tracks in this early 90s period, there's a history that goes with them. Multiple projects, Prince's eyes were getting a little bit too big for his belly, he wanted to dip his fingers into many pies, and ultimately that lack of focus brought about his deterioration with Warner Brothers. This is one of those tracks. It could have appeared on several projects and ultimately appeared on none. So we got it on the Crystal Ball collection of bootlegs and outtakes of 1998. In 2011, this song was surprisingly resurrected for a Holland show, a show in Amsterdam. I have seen this song performed at one of the very few occurrences in 2014 at the second Roundhouse performance. It was Plectrum Electrum that went into a bass jam that became What's My Name. It's had a noticeable outing recently on the Yahoo Live stream concert of 30th of September 2014, and a version with Kendrick Lamar adding a rap went down very well. So what do I think of this song? This is a song of contrasts. It's a very quiet lyric spoken over a low backing of a very sparse instrumentation for backing. And then there are periods where it erupts. It erupts with bass, with drums and sirens, accompanied with Prince screaming like a banshee. At 2 minutes 24, there's a great breakdown and the band kicks in. And it's the highlight of the song, is the moment where the band is called for, how they erupt in. It is very unconventional. It's unlike 99% of Prince's back catalogue. It's funky as much as it is angry. I find this an intriguing song. It's passable to me when it comes on, but I don't actively seek it out. I believe the reason why it doesn't speak to me as a track is because of the sirens that are used throughout. They're just too disconcerting. If I could take them out, it would be interesting to see what I think of the track. When I saw it live, I was shocked, as it is so rare that I never expected him to play it live. But a minute or so into that version, I realised I wasn't particularly happy at seeing it, because he also used the sirens there, and they are just disconcerting. However, that he has such a song in his back catalogue is a huge testament to the musical range of this guy. So I'm going to score it 48 out of 100. It's strange. It has some good elements. But for me, I just don't enjoy it as much as I could do. I ultimately find it a difficult listen. So that is What's My Name. Final track. That's right, it is Temptation by Prince and the Revolution from Around the World in a Day, 1985. It's track 9 of 9, the final track of that album, and it clocks in at 8 minutes 17. This song tells of temptation, lust, indulging your vices, and really, that's about it. So let's have some information. This was recorded as a one-day session at the very famous Capitol Records building in LA in the spring of 1984. It was then revisited, and the monologue that closes out the song was added in 1984 on Christmas Eve from a mobile studio that was positioned outside of Prince's house. And due to that timing, it marks the final recording for the Around the World in a Day album. Personnel on the track includes Prince on everything with saxophone overdubs by Eric M. So what are my thoughts on this song? Well, it starts with discordant guitar, designed to deliberately put you uneasy. Then we get a drum pattern that starts that, interestingly, from the moment it starts, it sounds sultry. And then we get the horn come in, the saxophone. And then Prince starts screaming. So in terms of components, Temptation is not unlike What's My Name. However, the sound of Temptation is clearly lustful. And it has to be said that this is up there with one of Prince's greatest vocal deliveries. He screams, he's all over his range, there's real passion in the delivery. I mean, this is wholehearted. Musically, I really like the guitar in the background between 3 minutes 40 and 4 minutes 15. It's a guitar part that sounds like Computer Blue on Viagra. The way Prince screams the lyric of the chorus at 4 minutes 20 is also absolutely brilliant. It's a time where he was prolific, and tracks like this show. At 5 minutes, though, all of that goes out the window. What should be a really great track, fade out, end, thank you, put it to bed, what a great way to close the album, starts to get marred because this monologue begins. To paraphrase the monologue briefly, I would say that Prince is trying to turn what is just an ode to lust and temptation. He starts to want to give it a religious tinge. And I think it's a mistake because it doesn't work. There is some clever interplay of the saxophone along with the monologue, but ultimately it's just too much. When it descends into piano and spoken word, it completely undoes what up until the 5 minute point was a gem of a song. There's a very brief consultation, like a conversation with, I would call it the Bob George voice that was used later on, especially around the Black Album time, but sounds as if it's meant to be a conversation with God, at 7 minutes. It just gets crazy and silly. It's like a movie that you're watching, but someone has turned off the video and all you're hearing is the audio. At 7 minutes 40, we get the hints of what would be a very nice piano bass line, but it disappears and the song ends. So for the last 3 minutes of the song itself, the only thing that really appealed to me is this piano bass line. It would have been interesting to have seen that expanded upon. But ultimately, it's a song that starts off very, very well. It is atmospheric and sleazy up until 5 minutes. It's really excellent. After that, it undoes virtually all of its good work. My score then is 61 out of 100. If it ended at 5 minutes, you could add 10 or 15 onto that score. easily. Unfortunately, I have to review what is down on record, and this song has been sullied. So our final song of the week, Temptation, gets 61 out of 100. So that is it for week 7. Let's have a quick recap of the ratings. We have Style with 43, Head with 58, Gold 86, Rest of My Life 50, Soul Sanctuary 72, What's My Name 48, and Temptation 61, making my Song of the Week, week 7, Gold from the Gold Experience of 1995 with a score of 86 out of 100. Honourable mention goes to Soul Sanctuary from Emancipation with 72. The rest of the songs from this week are far from highlights in the Prince back catalogue, but they do go to show the versatility of him as a recording artist, and in anybody else's career, they might be some of the best records that they have created. So that's it for week 7 of A Year of Prince. Thank you for joining me. A big thanks to music by audionautics.com, and I will see you next time.